Let's go, girls.
You're listening to Eco Frenzy,
University Radio Nottingham's official sustainability podcast.
Listen live on Saturdays from 3 to 4pm on urn1350.net.
DJ!
This is URN
University
Radio
Nottingham.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome to Eco Frenzy.
It is time for Eco Frenzy. We're starting like a minute early because we thought, you know what you need more of? Eco Frenzy.
Us. I think everyone needs more Eco Frenzy in their lives.
Yeah.
I get that. I get told that quite a lot. Everyone's like, I just wish you guys were on air more. I wish you were in the studio more.
I believe
it. I wish you were here all the time.
24/7 in your earlobes.
Of course.
Exactly. Wow. Maybe we should just rebrand as the Eco Frenzy station.
That would be so cool. 24/7. Yeah. 24/7 Eco Frenzy. All wow. the time.
Wow.
I'm not sure people could handle that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Oh, well. This week, we're going to be talking about lots of fun things. Namely the Willow Project, which if people are, you know, on their environmental news grind, they'll know about.
Yeah.
If they don't, I'm going to tell you. And Erin's going to start us off with some lovely targets because she's been learning all about it in her lectures, which is so good.
We love
it. I'm here for that. And sustainability in lectures.
We thought also we speak so much about targets and we like target this and targets for that. We don't often actually explain what are the main targets, what are they going to do, what's all of that stuff. And Erin, amazingly, had a lecture on this topic.
I don't want to brag, but I've been doing a lot of environmental stuff in my lectures recently. And it's been really interesting and really fun. So, well, I say fun. The information you find out is always a little bit like, oh, okay. But fun in general.
Yeah, you've been doing more environmental stuff than me recently.
And should we just clarify? I do an economics degree and your degree is environmental sciences.
Yeah. But yeah.
Georgia has one lecturer a week. For her entire 9K a year that she pays, she gets one lecture a week.
For her master's degree.
It's,
and it's science communication, so it's not even like related to
That's
environmental
so
science.
That's so funny.
I'm really feeling the value for money. Woo!
Anyways... I reckon we can make that an Eco Frenzy special, how much we hate our degrees.
I love my degree. Yeah. Leave me alone.
Show off.
I chose well. Ooh. It took me a year to decide.
You know what, maybe that's what it is. Georgia and I didn't take that year. We
yeah.
just
yeah.
went,
yeah. Why not? I'll do this.
Little gap year to decide. Gap year and an extra A-level to decide. But having had decided on my degree, I do like my degree a lot. Erin's degree and targets.
My degree.
Talk to us, Erin. Speak to us about the targets.
We're going to paint the picture. I'd like you to cast your minds back to 2015. What were you all doing in 2015?
Georgia,
how old were you?
30 then?
Yeah, I definitely graduated.
67?
At that point.
67? Yeah.
I was hitting retirement age.
So I was 13.
I was also 30.
Yeah.
And I was 15.
Yeah.
Lovely.
I'm the age of whatever year it is.
Yeah, that is actually quite nice.
Sorry, I just had a moment. You're the same age as my brother?
Grace.
Wild.
Wait, when was your brother born?
2000.
Oh, I was born in 1999.
Oh, so my brother turns the age, but you're... Right, got it.
But we're probably in the same school year.
He was... in the one above me, and you were like 5-6 school years above me.
At least 10.
Anyway, let's actually get on topic.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happened to Eco Frenzy today.
We're just in a silly, goofy mood, all of us.
We're having fun learning about each other.
You know what it is? It's because we know what's coming up, and we just are trying to procrastinate talking about how sad some of these things are.
Yeah, we're trying to give you like a little bit of
laughter.
This is
not a happy episode.
No, last week was a happy episode, and we're just coming back straight on our normal grind of dismal, dark, harrowing facts about the environment.
The Paris Agreement, which many people did see as a big success, 2015, it was a very big deal. It's the one we all reference now, and it was decided that we should keep our temperature increases to well below 2 degrees, which is the number we hear a lot. And it was at Paris, the Paris Agreement, that they said, actually, we should try to keep it to 1.5. That was the big thing there. And the target for that is by 2100. So they gave themselves 85 years to make sure that after those 85 years, we wouldn't be anywhere higher than 1.5 degrees Celsius. And we'll get into a bit if that's currently what's seeming like is going to happen. And there are a lot more things, but one thing that had happened that was different than previous agreements, because there were climate agreements before Paris, which I think I personally did not know. I knew nothing about these other agreements before, you know, going to these lectures, and actually whenever you start to read up on the fact that we had COP27 this year, there have been 27 other of these every year for the past 27 years. They're annually, so there is a lot more that goes on than I think is advertised or in the public eye. And I think COP has become a lot bigger now, and we talk about it a lot more, partially because it was in the UK last year, so it was a big story for the UK itself, and then because it's on people's radars, they are going to notice it a little bit more. But we'll get to those in a little bit. But there was a really important thing that happened is in the Paris one, is that they stopped having a distinction between countries that were considered industrialized and developing. But they still referenced and acknowledged that countries are in different places, because before then, they split countries into two groups. There was the industrialised countries, for example, the UK, and the developing countries. And if they were developing, they didn't have to adhere to most of the rules and agreements because it was seemed unfair, because they are developing countries, which is something we talk about quite a lot, actually. So I kind of wanted to hear both of your opinions on this, the fact that as of the Paris one, although they're still acknowledged that there is a difference between the two, they got rid of the complete distinction and the fact that before then there were two rules. There was a rule for the industrialised and a rule for the developing. What do you think about merging it all into one thing?
I think that it holds people more accountable, I guess.
It's a hard one. I'm not sure how I feel about it, because I'm in almost two minds, because there has to be the recognition that that developing countries do not necessarily have access to what industrialized countries have, and therefore the means to be as environmentally friendly or whatever it is you're discussing. You can make this even more general than just the environment. But then I think Georgia also makes a very fair point of that if you're separating people out, it's a lot harder to hold everyone accountable. And arguably that comes back to the thing, but we're living on one planet. The planet is not slowly but quickly declining, so really, do we have time to separate these people out, these groups out? Even if maybe it would be it would on paper make more sense, actually, if you look into it, I'm not sure we necessarily have the time to have people separated out and hold to different standards and different. We all just need to get on with it,
get on with it with the strictest targets possible. Because, as we'll find out, as everyone will go into, people are invariably going to miss targets. But if they miss a target that's higher up rather than a lower down target, if that makes sense, like, it's better for them to aim high but shoot low than to aim low and shoot even further lower.
So part of the reason why they got rid of this is because then they said that there was going to be payments to developing countries. And we have spoken a lot about, especially the more recent COPs, COP26 and COP27, there's been a lot about financing. And that's been a really big issue, because in 2015, that's when they brought in the idea of having $100 billion per year to finance in developing countries and other environmental projects. But the Paris Agreement was quite vague about how this was happening, where the money's coming from. And up until recently, this fund wasn't really established, because there was something about developing countries not legally responsible or liable for damage, because they were saying, we haven't done all this damage, but now you want us to contribute financially to this. That's not fair, we don't have the money, things like that. And so now they're very recently, in the past couple of years, they have come up with a solution to this problem, which is why the finance took so long. But again, it was something that was supposed to have happened 7 years ago at this point, 2015. Eight. I was like, gonna say so good at maths, and I was like, no, I'm wrong. But 55 countries ratified it, which was 55% of global emissions that they wanted to do. So eventually almost all countries have ratified this agreement. And then obviously very big news was when the US pulled out, and then about 2 months later when Biden became president, they rejoined.
Just to complicate things.
I know.
You know, just to keep us on our toes.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like the environment isn't going through enough.
Yeah.
So there's quite a lot. You can find a lot of details about who increased their CO2 levels, who decreased, what their ambitions were, things like that. I think it's really interesting that they were using different base years as their measure. So places like the EU and the UK using 1990 as their base year. China and the US used 2005 as their base year. And Japan using 2013. So even though we're seeing whatever changes we are seeing, they are they're using a different benchmark. So, and some of them are using different ways to measure it. For example, China, their aim was a 65% reduction in their CO2 per GDP.
Ooh.
So they are using a measurement where they're taking their CO2 and they're dividing it by their GDP. Now, because they've got a large GDP, it means they can pollute more.
Yeah.
Instead of doing a 65% total reduction, and that is based off their 2005 level. And their 2005 level is going to be higher than their like 1990 level, because that was very much around the time China was very industrialized and kind of became known for its industrialized sector.
Mm.
Whereas you see the EU, US, Japan, those are the countries going for a just a overall percentage reduction. And it is positive to know that they increased their ambitions. You know, they went, actually, we're going to increase our ambitions for, this was for 2030. So they're planning, like the US said, we're going to have a 50% reduction in our CO2 emissions from using 2005 as our base year, and we should do that in 2030. And they all decided, you know, we're going to be a bit more ambitious, which I think, as we talked about, can be a good thing. If you're going to potentially meet your targets, it's a good thing.
Yeah, but it is hard when everyone's using a different baseline.
Yeah.
This is like, because I was just, so I didn't know about what you just said about that we have our like baseline year is 1990, which even I was like, oh my God, that's, you know, that's really late. And then to find out it's then 2005 and then 2013,
yeah.
My face just like fell further and further. Especially as you continued to speak.
When, do you know the year that we use for our 1.5 degree target? Do you know the year?
2050, isn't it?
No, not the year we want to reach it by, but the baseline year.
Oh no, I don't know our baseline
1850.
Year. Right, okay.
Pre-industrialisation. So when we talk about 1.5 degree increase, we're talking about from 1850, from Queen Victoria era,
yes.
Pre-industrialization, that is our measurement there. So whatever the temperature was at that point, we call that zero. But now we're using our targets we're making now are based on 30 years ago.
It's just like, consistency.
Yeah, and this is, if you listen to part of what has brought this discussion on is that in our previous, last week's episode, IKEA, Is It Truly the Wonderful Every Day? Well, listen to find out. It's out on Spotify and Apple at the moment.
How can they find it?
Or at URN1350.
Yeah.
Or on our Instagram, which is EcoFrenzyURN, has the link tree with all link of the links
bio.
In it. Link in bio. But if you did, so we spoke so much about targets in that episode and were quite critical of IKEA's transparency around their not their targets, but sort of the transparency around their targets and finding out what their targets are and things like that. And then we thought, oh, maybe we need to do an episode on actually what are the targets, you know, what are targets, why are we doing this? And I think we now sort of understand why we're so cynical.
Yes.
About any targets, because yeah. You sit and look at the Paris Agreement and you're just like, oh, so this like amazing thing that everyone's talking about, well, everyone's set a different baseline, so it's not really something you can properly measure.
Yeah,
everyone has different expectations based on different things like GDPR or whatever, so what's the point?
And then when we have COP, when everyone comes together and goes, look what progress we've made, because all the baselines are different and all the outcomes are different, people can easily manipulate the data to make it sound like they're doing a great job and therefore don't need to have any of the like the fines or whatever they're trying to introduce to people who don't reach their targets, because you can just manipulate the data to say that you're doing it.
You can just change your target.
Yeah, just change your target.
Or you can put in place a target that... Yeah. That you consider that you will absolutely reach even if you weren't going to do anything.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, is that, again, we spoke about on the IKEA episode how much of those targets were put in place because they were something that was already completely within their reach, or were they put in place as something to reach for. That's transparency we don't have.
Yeah.
That's information we don't have. That's purely, you know, a speculation and a discussion. But it's an important point to bring up, though, that if you could, like you said, it's manipulating the data.
Yeah.
And it's, you're not actually making changes, and then you're like loopholing your way out of
fixing
looking after
the planet.
Like, it sounds ridiculous when you put it like that.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Are you ready for some more bad news? Because we're gonna keep going.
Yeah, we're gonna keep
longer.
Going. We've got the time. We started 2 minutes early for a reason, people.
We got our chats out the way real quick. So based on what I've spoken about, as of November 2021. So this is just before the Glasgow Climate Agreement Pact was enacted. They did a little bit of, oh, let's look at the data. Let's see, out of all these promises, particularly the Paris ones, that was the biggest step forward we'd had in a while. And then I would say probably Glasgow was maybe the next step forward. So with all that in mind, if we look at the November 2021 update on what the global temperature mean is going to be in 2100, because we mentioned 2100 is our target year, there are a couple situations here. If we say, these are just projections, so we know we're aiming for 1.5 at a maximum. Currently in 2021 we were at 1.2 degrees. If we were to say that policies and actions, so real world action based on current policies, occurred in 2100, we would be at 2.7 degrees. On average, out of all the testing and the projections they did, we'd see it about 2.7. That's way too high. If we reached all our 2030 targets only, and there was a full implementation of the 2030 targets, we'd be at 2.4 degrees. Again, that is 2.4 kind of being the middle number, with the lower bound being 1.9 and the upper bound of being 3. If we were to fully implement all the submitted and binding long-term targets and the 2030 agreement, so those targets, so that's the targets we spoke about in the number I just gave you, the 2.4. If we add to that all the pledges that people have made, we'd be at 2.1. And the best case scenario that assumes full implementation of all announced targets, including net zero targets, LTSs and NDCs. So anything that has been officially announced, if everyone met all those targets, it'd be at 1.8.
Oh, God.
So our best scenario...
I'm about to get up and walk out of the studio.
1.8.
Our best scenario is 1.8, and the point of no return is 1.5. So even with the best scenario happening, we are hitting the point of no return... environmental destruction, the earth is dead.
Yes.
So that's great.
So that's okay, so that's where we're at in 2021. Right, I've got...
Should I just leave?
Like, what is the point?
If I wasn't... if I didn't have my chair blocked in by Erin and Georgia being sat here...
You'd hear a slamming of the
you'd
door.
You'd hear a door slam and me leaving. Oh, because it's just, what's the point?
We just had a message in that says RIP Earthy. And that's
very true. So true.
Even
in the best case scenario,
yeah,
we are still doomed.
So I'd like to mention a couple of things from the Glasgow Climate Pact, which I think you guys really appreciate.
Really?
We talked a lot about the idea of phasing down, not phasing out, which we do not need to rehash this conversation, and phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. Now, what this meant, I learnt a week or so ago, was some countries still subsidise fossil fuels rather than tax fossil fuels. So some countries are still encouraging and paying people to use fossil fuels.
Oh.
And to find them and things like that, which I thought a little bit ridiculous. And they
decided that they were going to do an annual review of the 2030 targets to ensure compatibility with the 1.5 degrees. Spoiler alert, that was in 2021. It's now in 2022, they realised that wasn't going to happen. So this idea of an annual review immediately stopped working because no one was providing the data.
Because they had their annual
and those
review.
Who were all using different sort of measurements.
Oh.
Yeah. But they did decide that they were going to get this $100 billion a year climate finance as soon as possible. I despair. I'm not upset. I'm just disappointed at this point. There is something that I thought was really interesting around this kind of topic of talking about how you can... They wanted to give credit to countries who were actually doing something.
Yeah.
And they had some strict rules on whether or not you'd actually get the credit. And I really liked this. So an example is, I think it's easy to say the example and then we'll kind of talk through that. For example, this is hypothetical. If the EU is struggling to reduce in the EU itself. So they've gone, listen, guys, we've done the best we can in the EU. We need to keep reducing our CO2 output. However, it's not going to happen in the EU where technology is right now. They can go to another country, for example, India, and fund climate reduction in India, and they can take credit for those projects, and that count towards their EU reduction targets. That only is allowed as long as India would not have financed or done that project anyway. And I really like that is the caveat. The caveat is we will give you the credit, we will say, yes, you can add that to your reduction in in CO2 output. However, the big caveat is India wouldn't have done that if you didn't step in.
Yeah, because initially it sounds really bad. But with the caveat, I think...
Yes.
I guess it makes sense.
And the argument for that is kind of what we've been talking about. It is one planet. We're all sharing it. It doesn't matter who, where, what, or why, as long as the CO2 levels or whatever, the pollution levels are going down somewhere, it's affecting everyone. And if it's becoming really difficult in the EU, because I will say the EU does actually try, as much as there are the issues, you know, they are trying to an extent to reduce things. So if they're struggling where they are, but they know they've got some technology, they've got some money that could really easily fund a project elsewhere, and that project otherwise isn't getting funded, I really don't see the harm in that.
No, it's the same with like carbon offsetting that they do with like big business. Like what they'll do is, okay, we have a factory in Ireland and it's outputting an insane amount of carbon dioxide, but what we're going to do to offset that is buy up 100 acres in the Amazon rainforest to protect it, so therefore like those, like we're sort of saving, or they'll say, you know, we're going to plant 100 acres of trees to take in carbon dioxide emissions, and that doesn't necessarily have to be next to the factory, but it, like you said, it's all one planet, it's all relative.
I would like to end this, my little bit, on something a little bit positive.
Oh. I need that.
I don't want to oversell the positivity. This is the tiniest slice, barely a silver lining. So I mentioned the 2021 November, our targets, if we were reaching all our policies, where we'd be at with numbers, right? I told you, you know, your 2.8, your whatever, and how it was only going to go to 1.8. In 2022, they redid this figure. So just before COP27, they redid all the calculations and said, right, now looking at all the things that people have said, if they meet those, is this going to change anything? It doesn't change the majority of things. Obviously, there's only a year, so we wouldn't really expect it to be that different. And things like our optimistic scenario did not change at all. However, there was a change, a slight decrease in the 2030 targets only category, which means that if we reach every 2030 target, it's just below 2.4, so it's like a bit below 2.4 gets rounded up to 2.4 rather than just over 2.4 and got rounded down to 2.4. so there have been more promises made with 2030 as the target is what we can learn from that, which shows that it's becoming a lot more a lot bigger, a lot more spoken about, and it is more happening. And that is partially because the US and China in particular have made more agreements and they've had more action. the only big setbacks have been things like Russia and oil, and that has really been a big issue climate wise in the past year, particularly. That is potentially why there isn't such a big reduce in these targets, because it's not feasible with the increase in the price of oil and things like that. But yeah, that's where I'd like to conclude for my little rundown. And I'm not going to talk about COP27 because I wanted to leave it on a good note. I'm not going to show you the next slide in the notes, which has the in green text is the positive and the red text negative, and you don't need to see the composition of the green and red. But yeah, how are you both feeling after that little rundown? Anything stick out to either of you in particular?
I mean, I'm feeling...
I feel nauseous.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that, like, I guess you, Gabby in particular, now feels how I feel after 5 years of my degree. Like,
yeah, because it's not, like... Because we do discuss it in my degree, but not current stuff, obviously, history and politics. And we mention it in politics, but it's never this detailed. I never get a full picture. Like Erin's got her lecture notes up, and this conversation spans from her lecture notes. And I'm just like, I do now understand why Georgia is miserable.
Why I'm miserable, and why I'm always like, whenever there's any target, I'm like, but they could do better, they need to do more. Why is this vague? Because like the impact and like the feeling of like this impending doom, and people just aren't doing enough, and they're not paying attention, they're ignoring it, they're putting it off for like another government, another, you know, another business to sort out. And it's like, guys, we are, as Erin said, we are all one planet. And actually, you putting off is negatively impacting everyone.
Yeah.
If anybody has climate anxiety, it's probably got worse.
No. Well, I'm glad that I now have, like, we've discussed why we're so critical of targets. Even, like, I'll come back to the IKEA episode, which we were, overall, when we summed it up, were very positive about. But if you were to listen to the beginning of that episode, you'd think that we hate IKEA, and we love IKEA. Yeah. IKEA is doing amazing. So hopefully this is somewhat insight into why we're so critical of any vague targets or the idea of phasing down rather than phasing out and small phrase changes. It's not just us being cynical. It's because even if we were to implement all of the targets, we still wouldn't get to where we need to be. And on that note... I'm going to play a little song for you. This is Can't Stop by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
University. This
is
University
Radio
Nottingham.
Welcome back. It's still eco-frenzy. We hope we haven't made you too upset after that last
we hope
chat.
You're still here.
Yeah,
it was quite a sad
for what time we
minutes.
Have left.
Gabby,
not just time left in
Gabby has got
time
a bit
left on the planet.
Gabby, I might have to turn your mic off. You've got very existential.
That's fair.
In a sort of like existential dread coma.
I'm
now.
Very hungover, okay, and we're doing a very serious episode. And I will not pretend that I'm not hungover, and I will not pretend that I'm not having an existential crisis now. Georgia.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
talk about what you need to talk about.
This is not going to help. What I'm talking about is not going to help. And that's a perfect segue into, I'm talking about the Willow Project, which is...
initially sounding whimsical.
Sounds lovely. I always think of willows, they make me think of like water and fairies, very much like Tinkerbell and the magic fairies vibes.
Yeah.
Now, dash my dreams.
Yeah, so not really sure why they called it the Willow Project, because where it is, there are no willow trees, so I don't really know the...
Bizarre.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a $6 billion proposal from ConocoPhillips, which is a massive, massive oil company, to drill oil and gas in Alaska. It would be located inside the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska, which is 23 million acres wide on the sort of the north side of Alaska. And it's the largest tract of undisturbed public land in the United States. And the proposal is basically for the US government to sell them that land so they can drill oil and gas. And
So they're going to sell Alaska?
Yeah, basically.
I just want to make this very clear to me, Georgia. As a listener rightly put it, plot twist.
Plot twist. Plot twist.
Willow Project, not whimsical, not fun. Nope. Actually, capitalism.
Capitalism at its finest. And this project was initially approved by the Trump administration, but a federal judge in Alaska in 2021 reversed the decision, saying that the environmental analysis was flawed. But last month, the Federal Bureau, the Environmental Bureau, sorry, they published a final environmental impact statement for the project, that and they recommended like a slightly scaled down version from the initial one that Trump had approved, but then it then got reversed. So now Biden is now looking at it, which is this scaled down version.
The fact that he's even looking at it,
yeah,
it's concerning. The fact that it's not even being just immediately gone, what are you talking about? Get this off my desk. Is disturbing.
Yeah. Especially because we talked about just before Biden came into administration, I think it was around the elections, and part of what he was running for, him and AOC, they were both very much had a pro-environment plan.
Yes.
And it was very aggressively pro-environment, yeah, that they had to scale it down. And they had to, they realized that this is too extreme actually for a lot of people to vote them in. So as much as it was their plan, they also kind of, again, caveated it. Is that a word?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Gave it a caveat. I'm just loving that word today, that it wouldn't be as intense as they had described or laid out in this plan, which was a very long plan. I mean, we tried having a look at it and we couldn't get through the whole thing. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot. So it's really interesting, particularly Biden looking at it, like you were saying, because it would be what we would expect from Donald Trump and what his presidency kind of showed. But it's not what we would expect from Joe Biden.
Initially, when you scrolled through it on TikTok, you told us that you thought it was a conspiracy theory, so didn't watch the whole video. That's how wild this is, though.
Yes.
And so, to me, the idea of that it is even being looked at, regardless of whether it happens or not, regardless if it gets stopped, whatever, scaled down version, I don't care. The fact that it's even being looked at, no.
Yes.
No, thank you.
And this scaled down version, so the initial proposal had 5 drilling locations, and the scaled down version is only 3 drilling locations with the possibility of adding a 4th. So it's not really a scaled down version.
That sounds like, rather than a scaled down version, a trial run.
Yeah. Oh, let's see how many we can get, like how few we can get to push this through to then go back up. And even with the 3 locations, they could still access all of the oil that they were seeking. So like, it doesn't really change the fact that they would be drilling all of this oil. And over the 30-year lifespan of the project, it would probably release about 280 million metric tons of climate pollution, which is the same as running 2.5 coal plants for that entire period without stopping, or the combined emissions from 2 million passenger cars. So that's... Yeah, and a final decision on this project is due at, like, probably at the end of this month.
Silence in the studio.
Yeah.
Genuinely no words. I can't even see how this is a win in any sense of the word, because oftentimes, you know, as much as we are like, oh, don't really agree with what they're doing, I can see why you would do it, you know, for financial gain, things like that. And yes, I see to an extent that they would be getting a little bit of money, but it would be a drop in the ocean for what the US already has.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need this, what was it, $6 billion?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't need $6 billion, which sounds crazy, actually, when you say, oh, they don't need $6 billion.
But they don't!
As a student myself, I need the $6
billion. What are they going to do with an extra $6 billion when the world is all on fire and we're all dead?
Okay.
What are they going to do with it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
I really don't see how the benefits can outweigh the negatives with this situation specifically.
You're basically also selling a state. You're basically also selling a plot of land. And there are people who live there in Alaska. It's not like it's a, you know, a wasteland of no, you know, and there's no one there and it doesn't do anything and it doesn't have important is an important to the environment and isn't important like to biodiversity and ecologically, let alone the environmental impacts of doing that, the impacts on like the local community of people and of animals and plants and all of those things is ridiculous.
Yeah, so the project would generate about 600 million barrels of oil, which is more than the amount currently held in the US's like petroleum reserve, which is their emergency supply. So this is sort of why they're wanting to do it, because the US are getting a bit nervous about the fact that they don't have much left in their emergency supply of oil, and they want more.
It's almost like you should change to renewable energy resources so you don't have to worry about running out.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's almost like that's an option. And I get with, you know, what's going on with Russia and the price of oil recently.
Yeah.
Have been ridiculous. And it's part of, you know, what is causing the cozy lives. The cozy lives crisis.
The cozy lives.
Which I feel like we should call the cost of living crisis, but I have to call it the cozy lives because I need to trivialise it in some way, to be honest. But I think even with all that stuff, what we've seen is that it is important to rely on, you know, almost rely on your own country to produce your energy. And that is a really big thing. Also with food production, things like that, we see whenever we get any sort of war starts to creep up, you want to be self-sufficient as a country.
Yeah.
However, it's so much more sustainable, it's feasible, there's so much technology these days that there is no reason why the money should be going to fossil fuels and oil rather than solar panels or wind energy or whatever other countless really innovative ways to create energy there are. Why is that not what's getting the money? I don't, that's the bit that really ticks me off.
I know.
It grinds my gears.
I know.
For want of more explicit language that we're not allowed to use on air. Yes.
Yeah. And so the, one of the reasons why this has come up like now is that the company, so ConocoPhillips.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just, we've had a comment in about all of these stats, but no Georgia's stats ident. And I'm in control today. And I think the Georgia's stats ident is too fun and too whimsical for this topic. You may get it at the end if you're lucky. Or maybe if George just goes, I've got a stat for you all. That's
I mean,
one.
I was
that's
about to say a stat, so if you want to play it, you can play it now.
Just for the fans. It. But no, I'm not enjoying this.
Stats. Georgia has all of them.
You're welcome.
So the stat I have is that ConocoPhillips, the oil company, have recently spent $8.7 million lobbying the Congress and the Biden administration. Oh, God, that's a lot of words. Congress and the Biden administration. And this was just in the last year. And that is more than it has spent they have spent over the past 2 years combined. So they're really ramping it up because I reckon they know, they're like, right, we've got them now. We're ramping it up. We're going to lobby. But also spending $8.7 million just on lobbying.
When they could spend that on, I don't know, solar panels. I just
saving the environment.
I'll never understand lobbying. It just feels like legal bribery. And I just don't get it. And I don't get how it's ethical. And that's just a personal thing. I think I don't know enough about lobbying and how it can be done properly. But everything I hear about it is in a negative sense. And it's just, I'm going to pay you lots of money to do what I want to do.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much. And lobbying in the US particularly is huge.
Yeah,
it's a lot bigger. We have lobbying here in the UK. It is something that happens. But there are a lot more controls on it here than in the US. In the US, lobbying is like, basically, and in like, if you were going to split politics into three sections, one of those sections would be lobbying.
Yeah,
that's how much of an important role that it plays.
Yeah,
in US politics.
So one of the things that this project is like saying that they're going to help with is boosting the local economy and the local Alaskan communities. So there's sort of two sides of thinking within those native communities. There's one side that says, who are from the sovereign Inupiat for living Antarctic. God, I really can't speak today. I think it's all this depressing stuff is throwing me.
It's taken a turn. No longer is it the Swedish meatballs we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, last week's episode was so jazzy,
yeah,
so fun.
this week, it's just pure depression.
Pure depression. Anyway, the The executive director of the Sovereign Inupiat for a Living Arctic, which is a group that represents Indigenous Arctic communities, said that the project would have a devastating impact on Native communities and would worsen climate change. They said that they want to encourage Biden to listen to the voices that are the most effective, which are the people that live in that area. However, there is another side of thinking, which is from the president of the Voice of the Arctic Inupiat, which represents 24 Native communities, and have said that outside interests are drowning out those who live in the region, and many actually support the project just for the economic benefits. There is another side of thinking, which is from the native village that lies closest to the project, said that the construction of everything in the Willow Project would disrupt the migration of caribou, and the residents in the village depend on those caribou for food, like, and drilling would just immediately harm livelihoods and health, and people would have to move. So it will bring jobs and it will bring potentially economic fruition, but is it worth it?
It also feels like support hasn't been, adequate support has not been given to these Indigenous communities previously.
Yeah.
And it feels allegedly like the only reason that they are talking about that now is because it's almost like a proxy for being able to do this project.
Yeah.
It's not that they actually genuinely want to help and support Indigenous communities, because they haven't been doing that adequately previously. And that they're only bringing it up now so they can use it as an excuse to be able to put in place this project, which is not good enough. Mm. And like you said, Georgia, there are actually lots of negative sides to it, and there are other ways to support Indigenous communities that are not this. So that's why, in my opinion, it feels like that they're only bringing that up now to use it as a cover to just be able to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
It's just an excuse, and it patronises Indigenous people.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's appropriate.
No, it's not. And another fact that has come out of this project, which I have seen a few sources on, and I am wary of believing whether it's true or not, so take this with a pinch of salt, is that some environmental media outlets are claiming that if this project goes ahead, it is enough emissions to push us over that 1.5. Like, there is no point. Like, if everyone reached their targets, and I know we already know if everyone reached their targets, we're going to 1.8 anyway, but this project alone would destroy all of that. So it's like, if this project goes ahead, there is no point anyone trying.
Doing anything. You might as well just do whatever you want, because the planet's going to burn anyway.
Yeah, just purely from this project, because the amount of climate pollution there is.
Lovely. Well, I think on that note, we should just say, at least we're trying.
DJ!
This is URN
University
Radio
Nottingham.
That was Maisie Peters with a song we all know and love, I'm Trying, brackets, not friends. And I think that's very true. That explains our mood. I'm trying, Gabby's trying, George is trying. But whatever that oil company is called, we're not friends. we're friends with each other. We're not friends with anyone who's making any climate decisions, because we don't agree with any of them.
And we don't trust them.
We have actual trust issues. I have environmentally induced trust issues.
So true, though.
With the planet.
Any administration, I don't trust them to take it seriously enough.
Yeah, literally. And I don't trust that the fact that we, as three university students, obviously we do our research and they can sit here and discuss things arguably more adequately than actual, like, administration bodies can. I find quite funny. I'm laughing so I don't cry.
I just enjoy the fact that we come to conclusions, and that seems to be their biggest struggle.
You're so right, Erin. The biggest struggle truly is coming to any type of conclusion, even if the conclusion is we are bad, we are not doing enough. I'd have so much more respect for them if they were just honest, but I'm sick and tired of being lied, what it feels like being lied to through loopholes. Oh yeah, and also, oh, it's cut off.
Click it again.
You've been. It's not again. Working.
No, anyway, try
we
it,
have been greenwashed.
You've been greenwashed because I feel like, especially if we're like rounding up, sort of in our last 10 or so minutes before you guys get the lovely sports show on after us, if we're linking sort of the Willow Project and the Targets all back together, my like summing up kind of final thoughts and feelings is I just feel like I'm being lied to, whether it's lied to by Biden's campaign administration, who really pushed things forward and is now actually considering this as an option, or I'm being lied to by the Paris Climate Agreement because I didn't realise that everyone is running off a different timescale and running off different targets and everything, so it actually just makes it feel really pointless. I think that's my like summing up feelings. I feel like I'm being lied to, and I'd have so much more respect if people would just tell the truth. I wouldn't agree with them, but I'd go, oh, well, at least they've not lied to me.
Yeah.
Erin, summing up final thoughts and whatnot.
I think Gabby and Georgia can both see I've just got my head rested against the mic in despair. I think my kind of ending thoughts on this all is similar to you. I just don't like the fact that it seems like it's not that tricky. And I know it is, and I know bureaucracy is a pain, and it's hard to do things. But I just think if people really wanted to, they would. You know, if we wanted to, we would. And that is what I'm going to use in this instance. That little rhetoric
of if he wanted to, he would.
You know, if they really wanted to get stuff together about the climate, if they really treated it like the emergency it was, it would happen. And I think we've seen that with like the COVID pandemic. When push comes to shove, they can find a way. Now, I think some people, because we've had experience of like a random COVID pandemic that no one, although some people did apparently predict it, no one really saw coming. Right, no one really knew that was going to happen. So there wasn't this planning put into place, but then we had to deal with it immediately. Now, yes, we've done that successfully. So when the world is literally on fire, we might be able to deal with it, but we will be mitigating the effects of it. We won't be mitigating the causes, which means it will just go on fire again the next day. You know,
yeah.
If I've got a wonky shelf and I light a candle on it and that candle falls off every day, it smashes on the floor and it lights my house on fire, right? Why would I then go put another candle on that shelf? And fall off and set the house on fire again.
Yeah.
And that's the metaphor
that's what we're doing,
I'm
though.
Using here.
It feels like that's what we're doing though. Like, instead of fixing the shelf, we're putting a new candle on it.
Yeah. We're like, oh, we'll make a slightly smaller candle. Guys, yeah. It's fine. We'll just change the slight proportions.
Oh, yeah. No, like, we'll make this candle,
I'll use a longer
like,
slanted.
Wick. I'll do that. Rather than just, how about we just fix the shelf?
And Biden's there going, actually, you know what we need? We need two candles.
Yeah.
Yes.
Biden's there. Actually, you know what? I think we'll solve this. Two candles. And go, no, Biden, be quiet. Yeah.
Anyway, that's an analogy I've just come up with. A metaphor.
I quite like it, actually. Really it works. Like I think it sums Thanks. It up quite well.
And I like the fact that it does involve fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the world is burning.
God, if anyone's on my Be Real, my Be Real is a photo of us in the studio with the planet is burning and I feel nauseous as the caption. And that, I think, actually sums up my final
Those
thoughts.
Those are your final thoughts, but
Georgia, anything to say? Anything to sum up? Final thoughts.
We haven't done a sad episode like this in a while.
Yeah.
No, I feel like we're going back to our roots.
Oh, yeah. Like sort it. Of our like brand is environmental destruction but happy. But I think we really needed this episode to really hammer in, or like, you know, hammer in how bad it is and how sad I am specifically about it, and then I can then make Erin and Gabby sad about it as well.
Yeah, because I feel like this whole episode is just Erin made me sad, then Georgia made me sad, and then they sort of both worked together to make me sad, and then we're like, now I'm having an existential crisis, which I hope the listeners at home are also having.
Yeah, well, it's tricky. It's tricky, and you have to sort of like what you've got to say what's on the screen. I can't keep going.
We're reading your lovely comments sent in. One from Erin's mum. Do you want to give it a read, Erin?
I don't even know if it's from my mum. It could be my dad that said this. It says, Eri, mum says you can't come home if you're going to set the house on fire with a candle every day.
What if it's for the metaphor? It's for...
Guys, it's a metaphor. It's
for
okay.
Content. Yeah. Sorry, it's for eco-friendly content.
Yeah. A worrying lack of content ideas, as we were described by the Over the Trend podcast.
Yeah.
On that front, should we announce what we are doing? That's exciting content coming up soon. Or should we save that for another?
You can announce it if you want. Because I don't know what you're going to say.
Neither do
Why do neither of you know what I'm going to say? I swear we had this conversation.
You know what, Erin? You announce whatever you want to announce to you.
We can say whether we are also participating in it.
It has been officially announced that there is a certain member of this station who is going to go vegetarian for a week.
Ooh.
And
yeah, drum roll, please.
That is, in fact, Mr. Dom Allen, who is the biggest meat eater I know. And he is going to go vegetarian for a week. And hopefully we're going to get some other people on to talk about being vegan and their lifestyles. But we really want to see the
surprise guests.
Maybe
you may know them. You may not know them. Before. A voice you may have heard before. We'll keep it interesting. I think they know who they are. If they really listen to this as the podcast. As I know they listen to this as a podcast. Yeah. I think they know who they are. So we're hoping next week. Again, keeping with changing
Not
our content.
Might be the week after.
Maybe
next.
The week after. Oh, yeah, after reading week.
Yes.
I apologise.
I won't be here for that week, so... Sorry, guys.
Well, live on air, Georgia's leaving eco-friends.
I've had enough of the environment, and I've decided I don't want to do
after
it anymore.
After this episode, yep. She's done.
Bye, guys. JK, JK.
So, yeah, so I'm keeping up with changing some of our content up. We're having some guests on, some people you know, maybe don't know, and we're quite excited for it.
Very excited. Gabby's given us her final thoughts. Georgia, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know if I got to the end of my final
thoughts. Oh, yeah, you did still have some. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. My mother or my father interrupted.
Fair enough. My final thoughts are, it's going to be really sad if we lose all the polar bears in the world.
That's so valid. Why
which
haven't
is,
we not
which
got
is
the
what's
polar gonna bears
happen,
yet?
Which could
Georgia,
happen.
Why would you say that to me?
It might happen.
You know how she's doing.
I mean, if the Willow Project goes ahead, it's very likely that would happen.
Right.
Oh, so, on that note, we've got a slow, sad song to end.
Final thoughts is, Georgia's missing the polar bears, Gabby's nauseous, and...
Erin's going to set the house on fire.
Yeah. That seems to be it. Lovely.
We'll see you next week for a hopefully slightly more upbeat episode of Eco Frenzy. Thank you so much for listening. And this is Glasgow by Catfish and the Bollman.